On January 5, 1914, Henry Ford introduced a conditional $5-a-day wage for his assembly line workers. 100 years later, different people put different spins on that event. Some say it was Henry Ford paying his workers enough to buy the cars they were producing. Some say it was only a move to stop the high levels of worker turnover on the assembly lines. Here to look at these competing narratives and also to look at some interesting parallels 100 years on is MSU's John Beck. John's an associate professor in the School of Human Resources and Labor Relations at Michigan State University. Welcome back, John.
Great, Mark. Hope that all of you found a safe way to work this morning.
Well, we have one of the most disheveled-looking staffs that I've seen in an awful long time. I think we lead the media universe in hathead this morning. We had a couple of people spend the night at the station so they could be sure to be here this morning. But
thank you for your service that way.
Here's a quote from the Ford website I want to hit you with, John. In 1914, Henry Ford started an industrial revolution by more than doubling wages to $5 a day, a move that helped build the U.S. middle class and the modern economy. How accurate of a statement is that?
Well, I think that it's how it was perceived at the time and how it's perceived now are very, very different. So that I think that to a great degree that very well may be a correct statement now looking back, but I don't think that that was Ford's intent. Many folks almost called him a socialist or a Marxist at the time because of this whole notion of you need to pay workers enough so that they can buy the thing that they produce. There were those who were quite against the move by his part. But Ford really comes out of a long line of kind of benevolent paternalists who believed that you could take certain actions as a captain of industry that had a strong effect on your business and maybe a strong effect on society as well. So that $5 a day wage came at a time when he had actually instituted the moving assembly line at Highland Park the year before, doubling productivity without doubling the workforce. In fact, the same amount of workers, double the productivity. But he was facing at that time between 300% and 400% turnover of his workforce. So it was something where turnover was very, very important to Ford's world. You just can't have it that you show up in the morning and you have to go out on the street and grab a whole new group of workers that you train to work the assembly line.
300% to 400%? That's I can't even comprehend that. 100% sounds bad enough. How does 300% to 400%?
Well, you can imagine that people were not used to moving assembly lines. I mean, the classic Chaplin film, Modern Times, you know, has this hapless worker who ends up going through the gears of the machine and everything else.
Yeah.
And people simply weren't used to that kind of work pace. Most work was paced by the worker in terms of how much could he or she produce within X amount of time. Even in a piecework system, there was a good amount of actual discretion on the part of the worker as to how he or she got their work done. The minute that you go with machine pacing, it's no longer up to the worker to make the decision on how he or she is going to do their work. It's really up to the machine that defines the pace of work, and at times, actually, the actual nature of the work is defined by the machinery itself, which happened more and more over the decades since. Now, one thing about Ford, though, is that that kind of social engineering Ford, it wasn't only about turnover, it was about having, in his mind, a right workforce. So he wanted right attitudes at work, and he believed that right attitudes at work were absolutely linked to right attitudes at home. So when the wage is put in, this sees the real rise of what was called the Ford Sociological Department, where they were taking some of the, at that time, rise of social science and trying to apply it to factories. So they were going into homes to see whether or not your home was clean. Did you, you know, were you a sober individual? Did you have a good family life? And so part of the wage was not a wage. It was actually a profit-sharing check that came if, in effect, you checked out on those attitudes. Mm. And a lot of that, of course, could be, you know, quite in the eye of the beholder, depending on who was looking at what. The interesting thing in Michigan history, though, I mean, I think that a lot of your listeners might see that 1914, of course, is the closing months of the Michigan copper strike up in the UP.
Yes.
And so you get this drift of workers not only into kind of Western metal mining at that time because of the strike, but a good amount of people from the UP start moving down into the Ford factories. You get a good amount of people moving up from the South, both white and black. You get an increase in all of these folks coming in from Eastern and Southern Europe as well during that period before they cut off the kind of immigration taps. So this $5 a day in some ways is emblematic of kind of American prosperity and, you know, America, a place where you can make a stake and all that. But like I said, there were a lot of business leaders that were not that fond of what he was doing. But to get ready, I went on a few of the places like Forbes, Fortune, CNN's Marketplace website. And sure enough, all of them are using that same kind of, this created the middle class. Now, one thing to bear in mind is that this ran smack dab into World War I in only a matter of months after it was introduced. So a few years into its introduction, World War I hits, and you get hyperinflation. You also get you know, people being siphoned off to the war industries or whatever. So you get kind of a change in what Ford is doing with the $5 day because of that whole kind of change. The other change, though, Mark, that's real interesting is that what he was doing is he was instituting $5 a day for 8 hours of work rather than 9 hours of work. So it wasn't only that he was increasing the wage, he was actually reducing the workday.
Okay.
So in that way, it truly was a wage increase because of the fact that people were able to make in 8 hours what they used to make in nine, except that they had this additional kicker of all this money coming in from the from living right, according to Henry Ford's standards.
Was $5 a day a living wage in 1914, in the way that we refer to a living wage today?
No, actually, I think it was actually quite good by comparison. So it is true that you get people who advance quite dramatically based on that specific wage. You know, Detroit ends up, after World War II, having, I think, the highest amount of home ownership anywhere in the United States. All of that really a credit to the American auto industry for the most part. So you get a kind of a strong march to what we would regard kind of middle class life. Now, does that all pivot on Henry Ford's decision on the $5 day? No. It pivots on the fact that this is an unbelievably important industry that ended up making huge profits for Ford, GM, Chrysler, and the rest. And a lot of those profits were passed along to workers in the form of wage increases, especially after unionization starting in the 1930s. Now, one thing that this did do, it staunched an interest in unionization at Ford in the teens. The first sit-down strike is not actually at General Motors. The first sit-down strike is in 1915 at Studebaker in Ohio, or Indiana, I can't remember which. But what you get is this rise of industrial unions, the industrial workers of the world, and others who are very interested in unionizing auto, as are a lot of the kind of skilled trade unions at the time. So this $5 day plots the rise of the sociological department that ends up being staffed by thugs later, Perry Bennett and the Service Bureau. Those guys end up being able to keep unionization away from Ford until the 1940s.
But are you saying that the Studebaker strike, was that a result of, was that related to Ford's increasing their wages? Did they suddenly feel like they were being shortchanged?
I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the Studebaker strike to see if there was that kind of cause and effect. But what you have is a strong interest in unionization that's rising across the United States. Naturally, Detroit would be a place where you would expect that that would find expression. And what is true is that the $5 a day virtually kind of dissipated that interest at Ford for years and years to come, along with other factors. Now, just one last thing to say about Ford, just because Ford really was an unbelievably complex man. You know, he's rated as one of the top 10 bigots of all time on one website because of his anti-Semitism. But this is a guy that, on top of the $5 a day wage, on top of the Model T and Model A, you know, he creates on the Rouge really strong vertical integration, making everything under one roof, for the most part, for the cars. 100,000 people at the Rouge at one point or another. But this is the same guy who sentimentally sets up Village Industries across Michigan, where there are small batch production, often involving women, where they have water wheels and everything else. They almost look like small parks rather than industrial facilities. So he was a very, very, very complex man. And the $5 a day, I think, probably catapulted him to the forefront of American business thinking, even past what the Model T and Model A had done, only because of the fact that he was trying to actually make decisions as a social engineer, as a captain of industry. There were a lot of other competing car brands at the time, and I think that this was his real strong step into modern American management with the $5 a day.
So 100 years on, here just briefly to wrap up, John, 100 years later then, are young people today facing parallels similar to 100 years ago?
Well, one thing that's real interesting to me about the parallelism is that around that time, you weren't likely to have a regular job. You were likely to be a casual. You might work in an auto plant for a while, not like it, jump to another auto plant or jump to a brewery or jump to, you know, some other kind of retail operation. So what's really interesting is that these folks in 1914 didn't have a lot of job security. They didn't have benefits. They didn't have a variety of things that we've come to look at as the kind of the standard of what constitutes kind of an American career as an American worker. And I think that we're beginning to see that again, but some of it is because of the fact that young people can't necessarily find work, but some of it is because of the fact that many of them now believe that kind of I am the sum of my projects, my office is actually Starbucks, that kind of notion. You're seeing kind of a rise of folks who actually like the casualization by comparison to locking into one career, one workplace their entire life. So it's kind of funny how far we've come and how what used to be regarded as not a good situation by some is regarded as something that they seek out.
Talking of a legendary day, 100 years ago yesterday, the introduction of the $5 workday by Henry Ford. Our guest has been John Beck, associate professor in the School of MSU School of Human Resources and Labor Relations. Thank you, John.
Thanks, Mark.